I found out something very unsettling about Harry. He gambles.
What do you mean he gambles?
He plays craps in the back room of a private club. I mean, you know, you're 11, come on, little Joe. Snake eyes, hard way eight. That's how it goes. He loses a lot of money.
You had no idea?
No, I didn't.
Welcome to the Crap Vegas Podcast.
Vegas, here we come.
Vegas.
Here are your hosts, Chris and Josh.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 23 of the Crap Vegas Podcast. I am Chris. He is Josh. And Josh, how are things going out on the West Coast?
Things are going well here. We have avoided the storm that's hitting California and Oregon and that kind of thing, but we've avoided most of the snow here. So it's kind of slaining, whatever snow and rain combination is at the moment. But
yeah, you know, I'm looking out the window right now. It's 65 degrees and beautiful out, and we've had some really nice weather recently, so I'm not complaining at all.
We had a tiny bit of snow, but nothing, you know, hardly anything measurable or anything like that. So otherwise, doing great.
Yeah, we're moving on to spring here. Well, if you guys want to get in touch with us, you can do so via email at podcast@crapvegas.com. You can reach us on the forums. That's crapvegas.com/boards. Or you can always reach us on Twitter. That's the easiest. He's at Vegas Duffy. I'm at Small Whale 13. Or the show page is at Crap Vegas. And Josh, I've noticed I'm starting to get a couple more followers each week now. So maybe the Twitter blue thing is actually paying off.
Is making a difference. I know. Don't hate us because we did the Twitter blue thing. But, you know, we have to drive our engagement, as they say, and all that stuff. And
yeah, I don't like paying, but it is really cheap advertising if it raises us up. The only thing is I haven't been, you know, actually tweeting much in the past month. So I need to get back on that because I've been too busy. But no, it does seem to be working a little bit.
Yeah. One thing I was going to say, for we do have a lot of new followers on Twitter and that kind of thing. And if you're a listener to the show that is, you know, you're not on Twitter, that's totally fine and okay. And there's lots of different ways, as Chris said, to get a hold of us. But if you are a new follower on Twitter, and I'm talking more for me, but I'm assuming it applies to Chris too, and we haven't followed you back and you'd like us to, please give a shout. Because, you know, there's lots of new people that get mixed in with spam and robots and all the stuff on Twitter. So if you're a real person and you want us to follow you back and engage with us, you know, give a shout.
That makes sense. I'm not very good about following people back, and I think
I try and take a quick look at the profile.
Like one out of every 10 people,
right?
So, yeah, don't. If you didn't make the cut, it's nothing personal. I just don't click the follow back button very often because I'm.
That's all I mean too, right?
Yeah, don't feel bad. It's nothing personal. I promise. Okay, let's talk about previous episode feedback, Josh. We got a couple of things I want to address before we get into our meat and potatoes of the episode. We got a Twitter message from AZ to Vegas talking about our trip over to Mirage for the tier match, and he had some really good advice. He said, thank you for the podcast. Tip for your F&B comp at Mirage. I was there in mid-January and was able to convert my $100 F&B credit into $50 slot play at the kiosk. Josh, I wouldn't even have thought to do that, but if they are willing to convert it, that is a great option for people like us that have no desire to actually eat there, but don't know what else to do with the money.
Right. Right. As we said, I think I got $300, you got 150, whatever it was, and we weren't going to eat there. So that's essentially, we thought of it as lost money. So if we can convert that into free play, into slot play, fantastic. That might even drive us back. Maybe.
Just, yeah, for $75 worth of Heidi's, maybe just for a second to say hi. Yeah, so that is a great tip, though, for those that are out there and saying, hey, I wouldn't use that food credit. I'm going to be staying somewhere else. I don't want to eat there. I don't like the restaurants, whatever have you. At least maybe now you have an option. So that's great.
Yep, for sure. Thank you very much.
Okay, we also received an email from listener David regarding comps over at Wynn. And since we're the official Wynn spokesperson, that is unofficial, I feel like we have to answer this question. His email said, hey, Chris and Josh, just found your podcast and enjoy listening as I only play craps as well. Wife and I go to Vegas at least 6 to 8 times a year and stay at either Encore or Cosmo. Average $200 to $225 a hand, and whether I play an hour a day or 4 hours a day at Cosmo, that gets me 4 nights off or with some F&B. Host is also pretty responsive and will comp on the back end as well. Heard you mention that you have black card status at Wynn. Well, I mean, Josh has only said that 850,000 times, so you definitely
there's
can't
even
miss
an
it.
Article on it on Crab Vegas. The first thing
there
I wrote,
is.
Right?
Yeah, if you want to see Josh's path to black status, that would be a good one to check out on the website, crabvegas.com. Do you have any ideas how they calculate your craps play into points to get to black? Seems like only slot players get to black, or you have to average over $1,000 per hand. When I play my usual average at Wynn, seems like I can't even get to platinum, and I get no offers. If I stop by a hostess, they do very little. Any guidance would be helpful. Thank you, David. Josh, I was a little confused by this because I wouldn't expect that sort of response. But, I mean, what are your experiences at Wynn tier credit earning wise?
Well, I think we've kind of touched on this here and there. And first of all, it is hard, I think, to get to black at our level as a craps player, as a table games player. Much easier to get to for slots. And, sure. You know, I don't know the specifics of what's involved in that, but it seems like it's a lot easier to get to. I would say, you know, for us as craps players, you know, we're our average bets are between $300 and $500 probably per, you know, per session. We're getting rated somewhere in there. Hopefully, you know, maybe 4 to 6, I guess. And we're earning, what would you say, Chris, about
800 to 1,000 tier credits an hour, probably.
Yeah, that's what I was like going to say, about 1,000 an hour.
We don't ask as much as we should what they're actually rating us, especially once you already have the status, because you really don't care anymore and you know you're going to hit it again. But when we used to ask and our rating was between 500 and 600, we'd still earn 800 to 1,000 tier credits an hour. So I always look at it as, you know, your average bet, you know, almost times two, maybe a little bit less, but you should be, if you're playing 200 and a quarter, whatever it is that you're playing, you know, you should be earning at least, I'd say, 350 to 400 tier credits an hour.
Right. But then you have to figure, I mean, black is what, 70,000? I think it's 70,000 tier credits. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for black.
No, 70.
I was thinking back on his message. He said he didn't even hit platinum. That's only 7,000 credits. So even, you know, at 400 an hour, yeah, it might take you 15, 20 hours to get there. But that's not unreasonable. We typically, I think we took our first trip to Wynn, what, a month ago or so? And we easily surpassed platinum in just a single weekend of two nights.
So for us at Wynn, if we're averaging about 1,000 tier credits an hour, it's still going to take us 70 hours to get to black. And, you know, so it's not easy for us to get there. And that's not counting, you know, our slots and things like that, which we have a fair number of tier credits and slots that we get. But it's not easy at all for a table games player, I don't think, for a table games player at our level to get to black at Wynn. But it's certainly doable.
Yeah, no, I agree. Even at 200, 2 and a quarter, if that's your average bet, and said the way you said it per hand, and I assume you're probably, well, you said you're a craps player, so I was thinking maybe you were just playing blackjack and maybe they were, you know, rating it a little bit lower because craps has a higher house edge on it, so they gave more credits. I don't know. I think that you should be able to hit platinum. Yeah, fairly quickly. Maybe a few weekends there at that kind of play level.
If you're getting 4 hours a day and you're going eight times a year, and it's 3 days, Chris, you're the math guy. What does that come out to? But
I mean, I wasn't.
It did those numbers so fast. I know you were.
But that being said, no, I would
come
think
on, if, Chris. If follow
only
along.
Taking that many trips a year, then platinum shouldn't be very hard to obtain at all. But if nothing else, they should be kicking out an offer. We've talked about in the past that Wynn doesn't like hosts getting involved until you kind of get around the 250 mark or so, an average bet, maybe a little bit higher depending on who the host is. So it doesn't surprise me that the hosts weren't exactly helpful on the back end from that perspective. But you should be generating offers at that kind of play level.
And if you had a number square for what time it would be in the podcast when Chris and I would mention Wynn, I think we hit it at about the 4 minute, 38 second mark or so.
Chill. Yeah, make sure you use promo code Chris and Josh on your next check-in. Don't do that. It doesn't exist. Okay, but thank you anyway. David. And hopefully that helps you a little bit guidance-wise. But yeah, I wouldn't think that platinum, you know, is unobtainable by any means.
Nope, me either.
Okay, Josh, we wanted to talk about this week, Crapless Craps. We've talked about it before. I think it was back on episode like 3 or 4, where we had a good session and that got a lot of people mad at us about talking about Crapless. But we realized we really hadn't dove into the details of it or anything like that. right. the way that a lot of people have asked us questions. So let's talk about Crapless Craps a little bit.
Let's. And I think this is a good time to do it because off our last trip, the last day that I played at Aria after you were gone, I got my tail kicked at Crapless. So
it has that effect. And if you're listing pros and cons of Crapless Craps,
I hit the
one
cons.
Of the pros and the cons is that you can either win money very quickly or you can lose money very quickly the way we play.
Yes. And I fell on the lose money very quickly side. But so kind of the one thing I was going to say is we jump in. Let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of Crapless. But for brand new people, Crapless is, if you think of a craps table and you know it's 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 on the craps table, and you think of a Thanksgiving table where you pull out the extenders and you get more room at the table, that's how I envision a Crapless table. They're pulling out the extenders and they're squeezing in 2 and 3 on the one end and 11 and 12 on the other end. And Chris, do you want to do a more precise explanation of the difference between Crapless and regular craps?
I mean, that's the big thing from a pure layout standpoint is that you're adding box numbers of 2, 3, 11, and 12. Those can be points, where in a traditional craps table, those cannot be points. So how does that matter to people? If you are a come better or you have your bets on the pass line, that's where Crapless Craps really can hurt you.
And statistically, I'll talk about some of the specifics on that.
Yeah, Josh will get into the odds of how that changes things. But 2, 3, 11, and 12 can now be points. And those are obviously numbers that you don't hit as frequently. So making points becomes a slightly more difficult process. And even on the come-out roll, 11 isn't a winner anymore. 11 is just a box. So it does change things. Same thing for come betting. And just from a layout perspective as well, there is no don't. There's no don't come. There's no don't pass, which is great if you want to avoid those people. Now, Josh, we've seen people on Twitter that say that there is a casino here or there that may allow lay betting on a crapless table. I still don't 100% believe it, even though I've seen messages that say that they do.
Right, right.
I've never seen it. I've never heard anybody talk about it. I would be surprised if they would take a lay bet but not offer a DC bet. You know, that just, it's just kind of weird because who's the player that's doing this? And even beyond that, if you did want to play it, let's say you wanted to lay those numbers. I mean, think about the payback on those things, Josh. You'd win $1 for every $6. Who's playing that?
Yeah. If you've seen it, if you've seen the ability to lay numbers on a crapless table, shoot us definitely send us a message. But if you can, take a picture of the table or let us know where it is. I'm really curious just to what the layout looks like.
Well, I assume they wouldn't have don't pass even then. I'm thinking maybe they're just putting lammers on top of bets and saying, you know, lay.
Maybe, yeah.
But I don't know. I don't believe it until I see it myself, whether somebody I even trust tells me that. Josh, let's talk about some of the math differences
between
the two games.
So first of all, as Chris said, if you are a pass line better or a come better or both, Crapless Craps is not probably the game for you. And let's look at why. So on a standard craps table, house edge on a pass line bet, this is without odds, is 1.41%. On a crapless table, house edge on a pass line bet is 5.38%. So 1.4 versus 5.38% on a pass line bet. So right there, you know, stop. What are you, Chris? You're looking like something.
Well, I'm sure you're going to talk about this, Josh, but what about when you're laying odds behind it? How does that change?
Okay. So that on a regular table, on a standard table, I won't go through everything, but on a standard 3-4-5 table, if you're taking odds, you can get the house edge when you combine your pass line bet with your odds down to 0.374% on a 3-4-5 table.
Okay.
So 0.374. On a crapless table, you can get, if you're playing 3x odds, you can get that house edge down to 1.53%.
Okay, so it's still times worse.
Yeah, exactly. And if you figure, not always are you playing 3x. Sometimes you're playing 1x or 2x or that kind of thing. So I would say on a crapless table, the house edge would be approximately 2%, depending on what level of odds you're taking. And this, by the way, I'm getting my figures from the Wizard of Odds. So if anybody wants
it's official.
Go in there and dive further in. This is where I got most of my figures from.
Okay, so let's double back for a second on odds offered. So like we play at Wynn a lot. We'll play Crapless there. And Wynn keeps the traditional 3, 4, 5 on the normal point numbers. But they say on any of the extreme numbers, you can only have 2x odds. That's normal for them. I think at the MGM properties, from what I'm experienced, they keep the normal 3, 4, 5. But they say on the extreme stuff, you can play 3x odds, if I remember correctly.
Which is better. Which is better.
Which is better. If you're me and you play at home a lot in my local casino, they offer 10x odds on their crapless table. And that's for all numbers. They don't break it out. So you can play 10x odds on 2, 3s, 11s, and 12s.
Which
that's where I think it would bring it, you know, it would start to bring that game a little bit more in line with a traditional game.
Well, yeah, you'd get, I didn't go out past 5x, but at 5x odds, it's 1.04%. So, you know, you'd get under 1% house edge if you could place bigger than 5x odds. So, yes, you're getting into, you know, the bigger number, bigger times odds you can get, the closer you can get as far as lowering that house edge, getting it closer to regular craps. But anyway, long story short, you're looking at a house edge, you know, of roughly let's say 0.4, 0.5% if you're playing some odds on a regular table and 2% house edge if you're playing a crapless table. So
yeah,
that's
definitely not as good.
Right. So that's the pass line, of course, and that's also come betting. So clearly, if you are a pass line player, as I said, or a come player, and that's all you want to do, try and avoid crapless. There's no reason you should be playing it.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's jump into what Chris and I like to do, which is really placing numbers. And I'll try lots of numbers here. I'll try not to get too into the numbers. But place betting on a crapless table and a regular table is going to be exactly the same for a 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10. So the odds, the house edge is going to be the same. So placing the 6, 8, either crapless or regular, will give you a house edge of 1.52%. Placing the 5 and 9, as we've talked about before, is a 4% house edge. Chris's favorite number.
Yep, that's my favorite. I love the 5 and 9.
Buying the 4 and 10, of course, this assumes you're paying the vig on wins only, is a 1.67% house edge. So 6 and 8, 1.52, 5 and 9, 4%, 4 and 10 buy, 1.67. So if we go into buying the 2 and 12 and 3 and 11. So buying the 3 and 11 is a 1.25% house edge.
Okay, that sounds really good.
Right. Buying the 2 and 12 is a 0.714% house edge.
Crazy low.
Yes. So I'm going to kind of give you the whole table layout real quick. So 2, 0.71%, 3, 1.25%, 4, 1.67%, 5, 4%, 6, 1.52, 8, 1.52, 9, 4%, 10, 1.67, 11, 1.25, and 12.71.
Okay. So now so much that, math there. I mean, that's a lot of math.
It's a lot of math.
A couple things come up in my mind as you're saying all this, because luckily I don't see Josh's notes in advance, so I have no idea what he's gonna say.
I can react
just as well as you guys can. I think you were trying to shame me on my 5 and 9 again. So stop that.
I'm just laying it out there.
It may be 4%, Josh, but it doesn't feel like 4. It really feels like it's a, you know, it's a bet that's in my favor. But two, for people like us that clearly always play across and like getting action on numbers, that's why we like crapless so much, because the numbers that we're adding, not only are they statistically good bets, I mean, they're very low house edge on those bets. Which is very nice. But two, it gives us so much more entertainment, because there are no, you know, quote unquote, like lost rolls where a horn number rolls and you have nothing on it. So we truly get action on everything, which is great. And Josh, one thing you didn't mention, for those that haven't played crapless before. So Josh is giving, you know, the payoffs on buy, or he's giving you the odds on buy bets on those numbers. Typically a buy starts at $20.
This is where I was going to say too.
There are games that will be under $20. It may be a $10 crapless table, $15, where those would be place bets and the payoffs are different. On the buy bets, 2 and 12 pay 6 to 1. Mm-hmm. So if you bet $20, they pay $120.
Which is fantastic.
Which is terrific. And 3 and 11 pay 3 to 1. So if, say, you put a quarter out there, they're going to pay you $75 for it with your normal dollar vig that you would pay on a quarter. Right. Now, Josh, do you have the place bet payouts?
Yes. The place bet payouts? Yes. Or you're talking about, you mean place bets the house on edge?
No, the place bet payouts on a 2, 3, 11, and 12.
Oh, yeah. The 2 and 12, it's 11 for 11 to 2.
Okay.
And a 3 and 11, it's 11 to 4.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember what those are because I usually don't play right. place bet and levels.
That's the next thing I was going to say is another thing that is terrible about crapless is if you don't have the bankroll, or, you know, I guess that would really be the reason. But if you can't play at a level where you can buy those numbers, I want to really quickly say, mm-hmm. don't place them. Okay. I just gave the payouts to Chris. So I'll start with 3 and 11. 3 and 11, the payout is 11 to 4. The house edge is 6.25% on placing the 3 or 11. And the house edge on placing the 2 or 12 is 7.14%.
Ouch. Yeah. So a little high.
So if you can't buy it, and I didn't look at the house edges, but or if you're paying the VIG on all bets and not win only, you know, that makes mm-hmm. a difference. I didn't look at the specifics. But if you can't buy it and pay the VIG only on wins, it changes the game a lot and makes it much less not advantageous, but, you know,
for really us, you're advantageous, Josh. We're AP crapless players. it's not as lucrative as it could be on those games.
If you're placing the 2 and 12 and you're getting a 7.14% house edge, don't do it.
Yeah, Josh, thankfully in my life, I haven't come across a crapless table where they took the VIG up front.
Right.
All my local places and the regional properties around here, it's VIG on win only. Vegas, obviously, if you're on the strip, it would be very hard to find a place that took the VIG up front. I guess that's a couple things to be cognizant of. If you're a pass line player and a come better, and that's where a lot of your money is, or if you're playing below the level of a buy. So if you're under mm-hmm. $20 on your base bet, this is not the game for you.
Right. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. To me, kind of goes back to episode one of our show, which is, I think it was episode one, it was episode two, where, you know, mm-hmm. my rule was, you know the odds, but play the way that brings you joy.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, for those people that not crapless, I mean, that's what I was trying to do here, is not trying to convince you that it's the game to play or that you should do it or anything like that. No. I just want you to kind of get a sense of where it might not be terrible to play and where it is terrible to play. And if you like it, if you get the joy out of it that Chris and I sometimes get, go for it. Just be aware of, you know, the pitfalls and that kind of thing.
If you're playing heads up, it's a little bit different because you're stuck on the pass line every time.
Yep.
But if you're playing at a table with some other people, or especially if it's a full table and you want to stay off the pass line, this is the same game as any traditional table. Even if you don't want to play the 2, 3, and 11, 12. It really doesn't change anything at all if you avoid pass line and combating. Right. So it's an option for you. And sometimes crapless tables have much lower limits than a traditional table does. Now, at Wynn, they actually go the opposite direction, where Wynn only has one crapless table, and it typically has higher limits than the traditional table.
It's true, because they only have one going, right? So it's very hard for Chris and I ever to find a quarter. Sometimes we can get them to let us in at a quarter, but it's usually 50 or higher, right? Quite often, it's 100 or higher.
So let's talk about bankroll and bet size on a crapless table. We may have mentioned this before, but I think something to keep in mind, if you're like us and you're playing across or any sort of, you know, higher betting strategy, then you're going to need a decent chunk of change to play on a crapless table. Because no matter what Josh said, the house edges on those 2, 3, 11, and 12s, they do create a significant amount of variance.
Yep.
So they're good bets when they hit. But yes, you may go 10, 12 shooters and not see one of those numbers pop. So you need to have a slightly larger bankroll in my eyes if you're going to be playing some of those numbers, because it can be really hit or miss. It's feast or famine. And in our case, instead of playing the normal 270 across, 300 across, whatever we happen to be playing at that time, you know, on a crapless table, we're typically starting at 470 across. We're putting 50 on almost everything. And that's not accounting anything on the line, odds, feature bets. So you may have $600-$700 out there.
It's expensive.
So a 0.7 gets expensive very quickly, and I wouldn't encourage that unless you have a rather large bankroll to kind of back that up. But that being said, Josh, I wanted to talk about one pro in my eyes. If if you are way down on a session, Crapless gives you by far the best chance to catch back up. It also gives you the best chance to be completely sunk.
To go further down in a session, right?
Yes. I mean, you can play at a Crapless table for 15 minutes and, you know, easily, you know, go 10 times your buy-in, just depending on what numbers are hitting, because no matter how fast you press your 6 and 8 or 5 and 9, if you're on a table and playing the 212, your base $50 bet pays $300. You know, maybe you press it only $50 up to 100, then you're paying $6. I mean, it multiplies so quickly. Yep. Just because of the payouts, it really gives you a chance to make a pretty significant amount of money very nicely.
Well, and Chris and I talked, I mean, you know, this is just a one-off thing, but we talked on the last show about, you know, when we were playing at Wynn and the person hit aces 5 times in 8 rolls. I mean, imagine if we'd been on a Crapless table, that would have been
thousands and thousands of dollars. Right. Yeah. It's a tremendous example, change. But,
right.
Yeah. That's that lost rolls I was talking about in my eyes, Josh. I didn't have a field bet at the time.
You know, we know people hate Crapless. Some people hate Crapless and things, and we get a kick out of it sometimes. I think it can be a fine game. We're not trying to promote it or things like that. I don't want to see it taken over for regular craps, because I think particularly at lower limits, it can, you know, it is a much less player friendly game than regular craps.
Are we shills now for Crapless Craps, Josh? Or are we getting a kickback from...
Well, somebody said that once, too. It may have been.
God, we are making money from so many people now.
Somebody said those casinos are paying you for promoting Crapless, and they don't need us for that. I paid them a lot of money for...
And you know, it's kind of funny, Josh. 90% of the time that we go to Wynn, that Crapless game is reserved by a high roller... Or they have the limit way high for a big player that they're expecting to come there, more so than a traditional table. So, I mean, at least at Wynn, we find that the bigger players actually gravitate towards the Crapless table,
which makes sense
because you can get so much more action at that level.
Right. That's what I've been told, is that the really big crap players love Crapless because they can load up those extreme, you know, the outside numbers. Sure. And again, you're talking on a buy bet on a 2 and 12, a 0.71% house edge. So, you know, load that up, and if you can withstand the variance, it can be some really pretty nice paydays sometimes.
I mean, if you were smart, you could just play 2, 3, 4, you know, and 6, and then same, you know, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11, 12.
Well, I mean, I've had dealers
and
say
have some
that,
great
that, you know,
bets, yeah.
Yeah.
Just avoid the 5-9 and, like, I don't want you
which
to.
Which is always good advice,
and you're
right.
Doing terrific. That's not always good advice. It's an amazing number.
I've had dealers tell me that, you know, bigger Crapless players will use those inside numbers to fund the extreme numbers, you know, so they'll take their 6-8 winnings and put it on the power press, the 2 and 12.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Well, you know, that's, you know, I look at it from the perspective, if I'm playing on a Crapless table, I need a 2, 3, 11, or 12 to hit every roll.
Yes. Yeah.
I really do. But if you can start a good Crapless roll, if you can hit a 2 or 12 early, almost everything's paid for the rest of the
right.
I mean, you're gravy from that point forward, typically, once one of those hits. So it does completely change the narrative of what you're looking for in a roll. But it does make things more exciting, at least from my perspective as an action seeker.
So there we are. There's lots of numbers, and hopefully it wasn't too confusing, and it maybe makes you understand why we don't hate Crapless as much as some people, but for lower limit players, it is not so good.
Yeah, and you can avoid the bad things. Unless you're playing heads up, you do not have to play the pass line. You don't have to play as a combatter. There's no excuse at that point if that's what you're seeking, so you can make it work. Okay, so next let's talk, Josh. We got a couple people that recommended that we take a listen to a podcast episode called Rabbit Hole from the Risk of Ruin podcast. Is that a podcast that you have listened to before?
I had not ever listened to it before, and I'm glad I found it. I'm going to dive into their catalog a little bit and see what the podcast is all about. Right now, I've just listened to this one episode. How about you, Chris?
You know, I'd seen it on my recommended podcast a lot recently, because from what I can tell, the show talks to a lot of APs in different areas, sports betting, you know, card counting. And then they dive into even other things, Josh, like Elon Musk's, you know, his risk with rockets and, you know.
All sorts of.
I mean, so it's not just gambling, I think. I think it dives into multiple areas. But no, this is the first episode I've listened to. But I had some thoughts about it, and I know you've listened to the whole episode, correct?
Yep. So real quick, Chris, before you go too far in, why was it recommended that we listen to this show?
So this specific episode, yes, the podcast episode name isn't exactly indicative of what it is being named.
That's Rabbit why I Hole.
but what it focused around was dice setting. Specifically, Woo-hoo. They had a lot of interviews with an AP named Frank B. If you ever listen to Gambling with an Edge with Richard Munchkin and Bob Danzer, he's been on there multiple times, usually in the sports betting capacity, Josh. I think he's a big time helper of Mattress Mac, like setting
Mattress
up his
Mac,
bets.
Right, exactly.
So he pops up a lot in, you know, in media from that perspective as well. But Frank B, I think he used to be a blackjack AP and then of course moved on to other things. But this whole episode kind of focuses around a academic scholar trying to figure out, you know, can dice be controlled and have an influence on the outcome? Frank right. is the kind of the main guy that they talked to who tried to do this. But it's more of from a academic professor's writing a thesis paper on, is this doable? Is it not doable? They had, you know, they made a robot that could throw dice the most, you know, accurate way possible so they could have consistent results. And at
so yes,
end,
this was,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Chris. I was going to say, so they had two people. They had Frank B and then they had the person that built this robot.
Yes,
and
which I don't remember his name. That's why I just keep referring to him.
I want to say it was
professor.
Maybe Robert, but I can't remember for sure. Anyway,
they
built a robot. They had high speed cameras. They did everything, really, I think everything you would want to do to mm-hmm. see from a scientific standpoint if dice control could mm-hmm. be was achievable, if you know, dice setting actually accomplished something, that kind of thing. Is that accurate, Chris?
Yeah, I think they tried to limit the variables as much as they could by using a robot so that no humans were involved. They developed the best robot they could possibly make in this area, and at the end of the day, Josh, what happened?
At the end of the day, they came to the conclusion that they could not, other than a period of time when they concluded that the dice did not land randomly mm-hmm. For a period of 2 hours, I think they were able to achieve non-randomness. Other than that, they could not come to any definitive conclusion that dice control was possible. And even in that two-hour period where they found the dice to land not randomly, the dice didn't land the way they intended them to land.
Correct. Yes. It was non-random, but not in a way that eliminated sevens. So I think
one of the takeaways
interesting to listen to.
Yeah. One of the takeaways that I got was they concluded that if they could get the machine to land the dice so they landed flat, dead flat, before they mm-hmm. bounced and hit the wall, that would make them slightly less random in their ultimate landing numbers. But that was almost impossible to do even with a machine.
Yeah, no, I remember that section. If it caught an edge, if it was on its side at all, it was completely brilliant. And doesn't this go back to the whole you can bet on thing about less random versus more random, Josh? It's either random or it's not.
Yeah, it is either, right, exactly.
But here's the couple things I took away from listening to it at least, Josh, and you can share your feedback if you have
yeah.
any. Richard Munchkin actually gave a couple audio segments on the podcast, and I really like Richard. I think he's a very level-headed dude, and he was in my kind of area before when I was a blackjack AP. He was kind of, you know, well-known in that area. So I've always liked Richard, and I love their podcast. But at the end, when he was given a little speech about his thoughts on this whole thing, Richard said, if it were truly believable, where are all the AP craps guys? He said, because, you know, in his life, surrounded by APs in multiple different areas, you know, slot APs, blackjack APs, you know, comp hustling APs. When somebody has a play, eventually they mention it to somebody. And that person right. mentions it to two other people. And then the whole community knows about it within, you know, a couple months or years.
Right.
There's never been anyone that was ever, you know, out there as a craps AP other than people would say the golden touch guy. That we did a whole Patreon episode about, actually multiple episodes, the Dice Dominator. But that's never been verified by anybody to be the case. Every time there's ever been somebody that tried to prove that dice influence was possible, it can't be done. And I would go as far as say individually myself, I will put $10,000 of my own money on the line if somebody wants to try to come prove to me that it can be done. Because are you going to have randomness at tables? Yes. And there's going to be periods where it gets outside of a standard deviation of what you expect. We all have that, Josh. We all have
like
roles
the five
that go,
aces and eight rolls, right? I mean, that's the...
You and I have both had rolls that were 40, 50, 60 rolls long. And that is well beyond a standard deviation of what you would expect in a normal, you know, environment. Does that mean that we were dice setters at that point, not any other time? Of course not. You're just putting correlation with something nice that happened. But that was one of the big things that jumped out at me. And the second thing, Josh, he reminded me of one of those people, he being the guy, the main guy, Frank.
The scientist.
Frank himself. I'm sure he's a great guy, and I'm sure as a blackjack AP, he was terrific. But he reminds me of one of those people that tells enough stories that are fabricated that by the end, they believe their own bullshit. Because if you say it enough, you know, it kind of clicks in your mind that this isn't a lie anymore. It's like Costanza when, you know, George used to always say, it's not a lie if I believe it.
Well, I want to say a couple things about that. First of all, I think you're right. But, you know, he even talks in the episode, on this episode of Risk of Ruin, you know, his process, you know, going around from casino to casino, looking for the right, you know, table bounds and all this kind of stuff. And finally finding ones that are perfect and the perfect dice and blah, blah, blah. And in his defense, he said he would never charge to teach somebody this. Never try and teach somebody this. He said he's had the biggest players, you know, celebrities reach out and want him to teach their system. Yep. And he said he couldn't duplicate what he believes to be his own ability to influence the dice. He couldn't teach it. It's not worth the time and effort, all of those things. So, I mean, I think that's ultimately what I would say is whether you believe him or not, he himself is saying, I can't teach somebody this. I'm not going to charge somebody for this. I can't teach somebody this.
Which is probably why I take such umbrage with the Golden Touch craps people trying to rip people off for money.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Because they're it's a self-fulfilling prophecy where if you have a good roll, they're going to say, yep, you were throwing them right that time. Good job. Your form was perfect. And if you have a 0.7, it's, oh no, your launch angle was off by 2 degrees. there's nothing you can do to disprove them. So they're just collecting your money for nothing.
Now, I would say I'm a much less, I want to put words in Chris's mouth, but I think I am a much less.
Hey now. Wait, do we have to cut that? We're about to put an explicit tag on this episode.
Okay, let's start over. I am a much less scientifically minded person, I would say, than Chris is, or math minded, whatever it is. And what I'm trying to say is I want it to be true. I love the idea of thinking I can go. Yeah. Okay. So maybe we're the same in that sense. I love the idea of thinking I can go up to a table and set the dice with, you know, a flying V or whatever it is and throw them each time and have it work. Sure. And I pretend that works, you know, in my head. I go, you know, we go through the little rituals and things, and I like to think, oh, I can do this again. And I can, we've talked about this before, but you know, and I can, maybe, who knows, maybe I have one session where whatever I'm doing, the results are truly not random. And I am in some way influencing the dice not to do something or other. And maybe I capture lightning in a bottle for that one session. Who knows? I would never, you know, I'd never be able to repeat it again, that kind of thing. But I want it to be true. We all want this to be so great to know that you could have an influence on the numbers that rolled.
It would, but I think that thought process is also extremely dangerous.
Yes,
where
it is.
You think there is something that you could do or, you know, aren't doing but should do, you did do for a while and you aren't doing anymore.
Right.
That could cost you a lot of money having mindsets like that. I think it's so much safer just to know you have no control over these dice. It does not matter who at the table is shooting them. The only reason I even get upset about dice setters is not because in their mind they think they can do this and they can't. That doesn't bother me because we have plenty of things in life where somebody believes they can do something that they can't and we just move on.
Right.
The only reason it bothers me at a craps table is just because it typically slows down the game so much and I prefer a faster pace of play because dice setters never, you know, release the dice after they're sent within 5-10 seconds. It's always a 25-30 second whole thing. And then all those people typically, they want to give you shit when you have a bad roll, and then, you know, oh, this guy's not a dice setter. I won't even put bets out for him. And then they come around and go 0.7. It's like, it's nothing.
That's what I was going to say, too. They go through the thing that bothers me. I'm not as bothered by it with you, except for, you know, they go through this whole big routine, and then it's 0.7.
Yes.
Like, dude,
why did you just waste 10 minutes of my time like doing this?
We thought you knew what you were doing, and you let us down. I mean, I've had people say, you know, the way I circle the dice and I hold them and I'm smiling or whatever, it's like, you look like you're a good shooter. Well,
no, there is no good shooter.
If you like my charisma at the table and you think I bring good energy or whatever, great. That's what I want, but don't think that I'm going to be able to throw the dice any better, quote unquote, better than you are or than anybody else. Right.
I agree. That's why the whole pass the dice thing is so stupid, or people are like, oh, I'm not a good shooter. I'm not going to shoot. That whole thing is so ridiculous. If it's your turn, if you want to throw the dice, throw them. You're not a bad shooter. You're not a good shooter. You're just a shooter. You're doing what everybody else is doing. And if you don't
the bad looks or whatever that you get, right, then, you know, by all means, you don't have to take that on.
Yeah, then pass the dice, because you doing that is going to have no effect on the table, just like you shooting is going to have no effect on the table.
If you think you're going to throw the dice off the table, pass them to me.
I wouldn't know anybody that does that consistently. But if I did, I'd say just tell that guy to pass.
But anyway, so maybe we had confirmation bias, and this episode of The Rabbit on Risk of Ruin just reinforced our already not belief that.
I was a little concerned because, Josh, as I was listening to it, I actually listened to it in two parts. I listened to the first half an hour one day, and then I listened to the last half an hour, 40 minutes of it yesterday. And the first half an hour was making me extremely upset.
Because I know Chris was texting me. He was upset at this episode.
Well, at the time, I didn't know which direction the episode was going.
Right.
I thought that they were going to try to prove that this was doable through some of the stories they were telling and the steps that they were taking. And I was getting angrier and angrier. And then finally, I got towards the end where I found out, of course, they couldn't do this because it's impossible. And it made me feel much better about the episode in general, even though Frank and I think a couple other people involved in the episode still showed optimism that it was doable.
Yes, I think that the ultimate conclusion was they still believe that it might be possible given the right set of circumstances, which is, I mean, that's the problem we all have, is that, you know, or not problem, but whatever it is, we all believe that, you know, we dream that it might be possible under the right set of circumstances, and we try and recreate those circumstances or create those circumstances.
Well, that's why those Golden Touch people make me so mad, because even if they did have the ability to teach you how to do this a certain way, there's so many variables in a casino that they can't teach you for, because the table that they teach you on in that guy's garage is going to be completely different than the table you play on in real life. Even if it's just an extra layer of padding or a removed layer of padding, or the diamonds on the back wall are slightly different, or the dice are slightly different. There's so many things that play into the way that those dice bounce. There's nothing they could ever do to teach you everything you would need to know based off each situation. So even if they could perfect it on their own table, which they can't, then they sure as hell can't perfect it in the wild where variables change.
But they don't tell
you that. They charge you thousands of dollars, collect your money, and then you go your way and nothing ever comes of it. That's what bothers me. So let's feed into part two of things that were causing me to be disgruntled this week. I saw a message this morning from Reggie on Twitter saying that Lucky D was starting to offer a blackjack experience. And I thought, oh, lovely. Is he selling you $1,000 blackjack, you know, basic strategy card? I mean, what is he doing?
So I went over. It's a gold plated basic strategy card.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I think literally, Josh, he's standing behind you and being like, hit, stand.
Right.
You know, like giving you direction on what to do with each hand, which would drive me insane. But that being said, I did happen to visit D Lucky's website again today, and I noticed a lot had changed on there.
You happened to visit it. You just happened to find yourself there.
I wanted to see what was going on.
So I woke up to a text this morning from Chris telling me about the D Lucky experience.
It was on my mind. So, Josh, what I'm going to assume happened is he got threatened with a lot of legal action. Because if you look at his website now, There is no more D-Lucky jackpot experience as something that you purchase. What he's doing now is he's saying that you can purchase the D-Lucky experience for $1,800, Josh. $1,800. Ooh. And what does that get you? It gets you 10 minutes with D-Lucky. So you can take one photo with him. He gives you a swag bag, which I'm sure is worth a big $50 or so of junk that you do not want. And that's pretty much it. And if you want to bring somebody with you, it still costs an extra $500. If you want extra pictures, it's still $300.
Oh, your plus one is $500?
But notice I didn't say anything about gambling.
Right.
So that's just to meet him. Now he offers an additional jackpot experience for free.
Oh, that's good.
And for that, he'll come sit with you at the machine and point out which machine to play at and all the other bullshit that he's been doing forever.
Right.
So a lawyer got to him and said, look, you can't charge for that. Charge people to meet you and then allow them to have the jackpot experience for free. That does not change anything in my eyes. It is still absolute bullshit. The guy should be taken down for what he's doing because it's really just, it's theft by deception, Josh. That's what it is. He's just got enough legalese on the page now to try to protect him from future issues. But it's still just as frustrating today as it was a week ago.
And he's got the reputation now, I would think, that you know people are still going to believe that he can pick the winning slot machines and they're going to pay that $1,800 or whatever to get the experience. In the exchange for that, he's going to point out what he believes are the winning slot machines.
Well, unfortunately for me, I will say that he pops up on my Facebook feed all the time with his stupid little short videos of somebody hitting a jackpot. And you know what, Josh? I haven't seen any videos of him just sitting there with somebody talking and them saying, I spent $1,800 and I'm happy.
And I'm
out. I don't see that. Yeah, I haven't seen that yet, but maybe that's coming in the new set of clips.
So should we start charging a CV experience fee?
Yeah, I think so. That's the direction I was going after learning this. I know that Michael Traeger is working on a Baccarat experience for and all
Red
his
D
people.
And a roulette experience.
Reggie's going to have a roulette experience. So I guess as long as we can get there before Seth does, we're going to have a Crap Vegas crap experience where we will come. We'll meet you at Tower Suites Bar. We will buy you a coffee at the Tower Suites Bar. We'll talk to you for 5 to 10 minutes. And if you want to join us at the craps tables, you can. We don't promise anything there, but we're going to do all of this. And we'll throw in a t-shirt just for the hell of it. $2,000.
We'll point out Rick and Sabrina at Wynn to you.
Yep. We'll point out all the good people that we love playing with. It will be an amazing experience for you. I'll tell you what, if you really want for $2,500, I will take you into the RFB room at Wynn that not everybody has access to. How's that? I think that's fair.
Oh, sure.
So if you're interested in that, just go ahead and send me an email, podcast@crapvegas.com, and we'll get you all set up and we'll do it on our next trip.
Or you can just meet us for free anytime we're in Vegas and we'd be happy to play dice with you. Because that's the kind of guys we really are.
That's Chris over, Josh. We are leaving money on the table here. We can't do that anymore.
We're done with that.
No pictures. If you do want a picture with us, I mean, Jesus, at least $1,000. Just
I can just picture us. No pictures, please. No pictures. We need security. We need security.
Well, I think he has security because people have threatened to kill him after they got done with and didn't win any money. Now, what do we do about people like Adam, Travel Fanboy, that we ate dinner with? I mean, Jesus, Josh, that's like a $5,000 dining experience.
Well, yeah, I think Adam owes us a lot.
He does. I mean, the publicity he got from us having dinner with him, I mean, that's priceless. Okay. So
okay,
that's
enough
all
negativity
I have
on D-Lucky and his whole experience.
Yeah. Anyways, let's get back to something more positive. I did have one question I wanted to answer this week, Josh. We got an email from listener Seth regarding bankroll, and we talked about it a little bit earlier with Crapless, but he said, hey guys, love the show. Definitely want to go on the next trip with you. My local property is the Bristol Hard Rock. You guys have to come down. Question, I have been adopting my playing style to more of what you guys do, except I do a 2-hit and regress to 25 a number, then press back up. How much of a bankroll do you guys play with? And then I think, what would he need to make it work? Thanks, Seth. First of all, do not copy us. That is never a good idea, I've learned.
So we've
got too many listeners saying, I tried to do what you do, and I was bankrupt 5 minutes later.
now's a good time to jump in and you know, Dr. Mike has called our betting style what, Chris? the bankroll destroyer.
Yeah, I don't know if Mike wanted us to mention it or not, Josh, but I got a text from Mike last weekend. He said he was on his way to Diamond Joe Wirth, and his wife said, don't stay too long. And he said, don't worry, I'm doing Chris and Josh's bankroll destroyer, you know, strategy. So it shouldn't take too long, or I'll come home with a ton of money. One of the two. So the way that we play, I would not recommend to other people, because it truly can be bankroll destroying. Not as bad as that triple lux stuff that we talked
about. Right, that's a worse bankroll destroyer.
But the way that we do play does create a lot of variance. So for us, with our normal betting strategy, Josh, it's hard to say what our bankroll is, because typically we play on credit. So we have a lot more available than we ever want to spend in a day. But I would say if you're looking to get like a solid 3-4 hours in a day and you want to play kind of the similar way we do, Josh, I would say at least 10 to 15,000.
Are we talking a day or a session?
For a day.
I mean, the regressing is going to help. The regressing is going to lower that variance, you know, a fair bit, as long as you don't have a lot of 0.7s, you know, when you regress down to 25 and,
for sure,
you know,
yeah,
and then build back up. That'll help. But yeah, I think you still, I mean, for a day, 5 to 10 is a pretty, you know, I think that's about where you want to be.
Playing the way that we play, you can blow through $5,000 in 20 minutes, 25
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah.
So if you're really trying to get 3-4 hours out of it, yeah, I would have a much higher number to withstand some of the variance. And like we said, there's many things that you can do to limit that variance or lower it at least. A regression strategy is definitely a good option there. You know, playing less on the odds or, you know, lower on the pass line than we do if you can is sure going to help that. You know, just simply collecting and not pressing, you know, every couple hits is going to make a big difference as well. If you can just hit them once and collect your money back, you're good. So there right. are or, things that you can do.
Don't play the 5 or 9.
Nope, that's not an option. He wants to be like us. He wants to be cool, Josh. So he's got to play the 5 and the 9. So yeah, I would say, Josh says 5 to 10. I would say 10 to 15 a day. Yeah, it's just, it's very bankroll intensive. So that's why I try to suggest people stay away from it, because I don't want to get a message from somebody saying, hey, I played your way and I got my ass handed to me and I'm divorced now. I don't want that. That's not good for anybody. But yeah, I mean, you just got to keep in mind that when you got $400 or $500 on the table at a time, it doesn't take a lot of 0.7s to go through a bankroll pretty quickly.
And or you six absolutely, under, right.
And you absolutely are going to have plenty of sessions where you go 0.7, 0.7 4 or 5 times in a row. It's going to happen. So just if you can withstand that, then you should rebound a little bit mathematically, but no guarantees. I mean, you could go a couple hours and have nothing and lose a heck of a lot more than you want to.
I guess the other thing to think about is whatever your bankroll is, you know, are you going to be okay if the session's over in an hour and you've gone through that whole bankroll? If that's okay with you, you know, and
sure,
that can
that
be
changes
enough
the
to,
dynamic for sure.
That holds you for the day, then right. You know, that's something to think about too, is do you really want to play for 5 hours, or do you just want to play as long as that 5,000 lasts until you double it or whatever your goal is?
Yeah. I mean, if you have a $5,000 bankroll, you can play at a $50 table for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a very long time. You can make that last, you know, for hours and hours and hours if you want to. I mean, just play the 6-8, maybe pass line with single odds.
Right.
I mean, there's plenty of ways to do it to make that extremely exciting. But by playing, you know, by playing across and incorporating the 4 and the 10, especially because it's hit less, playing the feature bets the way that we do, all those things, you know, full odds, all those things make the variance extreme. And you can have terrific sessions and terrible sessions. There's very few that fall in between. Okay, Josh, so let's start to wrap this thing up. Patreon, patreon.com/crapvegas. Thank you to all those new patrons that we have and everybody else that's placed orders through our store at crapvegas.com/shop. The new patrons I saw, Josh, for this period were Kenneth S., Blair M., Jeff, and Dwayne P.
And I think Blair sent us, didn't he, Chris, a PayPal donation too, which was nice.
He did. He sent us a separate PayPal donation, which was extremely nice. I saw his note come across for the PayPal, and then I saw a Patreon registration shortly after. So thank you again for all those things. We do appreciate it. And Joshua and I were talking about this before we even got on to record today. I mean, between the main show and now on Patreon, there's probably well over 50 hours of listening to us talk, which sounds horrible, being who I am.
Hopefully not if you like this show.
But if you love the show, then yes, there is a bunch of us available. Patreon has a new episode posted every 2 weeks on Friday, and we're always doing something different on there, talking about something. There's a bunch of good stuff on there. We've got terrific feedback. So we'd love to have you join us. Josh, we have more and more people every episode convert from a monthly plan to an annual plan. I think we had 3 or 4 of those people this period as well. Thank you for doing so. That's definitely great that you do that. Definitely keeps putting pressure on us at the same time that we got to keep pumping out content. So you're keeping us engaged and locked in.
Yeah, absolutely. And we try our best not to repeat topics or you know, themes as much on the, you know, from Patreon to the regular show. Sometimes we'll cross over a little bit here and there, but we try our best to keep, you know, keep our Patreon content special and unique to, you know, from this show, that kind of thing.
You know, Josh, that's a good point. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've had a couple people message me on Twitter saying, hey, what's different between Patreon and the main show? The main show kind of is what it is. You hear it every 2 weeks. You know, we take some questions here or there. We talk about a topic that we find interesting and we get out. Patreon is really just a chance to expand on things that we can't really expand on too terribly much on the main show for time purposes, maybe talking more about a specific property or, you know, a specific thing that's existing in our life at that point. We try to dive into that. There's also video content, you know, with just gambling related shows and our kind of just fun feedback on that, just to have a little fun and sit down and talk. It really is its own little kind of different thing. And for people that are patrons right now, they kind of know what we're talking about. It's hard to explain, but it really is completely different than the main show.
Right. But it's still us.
No, still just, honestly, what I say Patreon is, Josh, is you and I, we're going to sit down an extra day a week and just talk about random crap anyways. So why not record it? That's really what it is. We're usually having fun talking about something.
You don't get the scarecrow and Mrs. King open, except this last one.
Oh, that's true. But it also, one thing I do like, Josh, it's a place that we can talk about things a little bit to more of a selective audience that we don't probably want out in public.
Right.
You know, feelings on certain things or certain people or anything like that. I don't want that blasted in front of all the listeners, but if you're a patron, you get that lovely feedback I can provide.
So thank you very much again from me to all the patrons for your support. It means a lot to us.
Absolutely. Upcoming trips, Josh. I know you and I are trying to get back out there, the last week of April? Is that right?
The last week of April. I actually have a trip out 2 weeks before that. I'm taking the family again, and this we did mention on Patreon. I'm taking the family. It's a family trip again to Vegas, and we're crossing another thing off the bucket list. We're going to see Barry Manilow. somebody's miserable. Bucket list. Not necessarily my bucket list, but somebody's bucket list. And we are not staying at Wynn. We're not staying at Westgate. We are staying at Vidara. I wanted to do no casino property and no smoking property and that kind of thing, because we're taking the wife and kid again. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to my player communication specialist, and because I lost so damn much money on the last trip to Aria, he is gracious enough to set me up at Vidara without any expectation of gambling. I said it was going to be a non-gambling trip, so little quick trip in April, the middle of April with the family, and then a trip hopefully at the end of April with you.
Barry Manilow. Was Wayne Newton not available that weekend?
I have never seen Wayne Newton. I should see Wayne Newton sometime.
Oh yeah, should do a Wayne Newton.
Wait, we
Ronnie Osmond
could do,
double weekend.
We should do Wayne Newton.
No, we didn't. That's not happening.
I wish you all could see Chris's face.
Yeah, no. Absolutely not. That sounds great for you guys. I hope you have a good time.
Come on, you took us to Penn and Teller. We can do Wayne Newton.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what we're going to do next show. We could do Absinthe. We could do... Yeah. You haven't seen Opium yet, have you?
I haven't seen Opium, no.
Well, maybe
you
next trip we'll go to...
Wayne Newton.
No, I don't want to see Wayne Newton, so we'll take you to Opium, maybe. Okay. Quick reminder for everyone, please subscribe, like, and review our podcast on your favorite podcasting app. Visit our merch store at crapvegas.com/shop. We have had a handful more reviews recently, which I appreciate people taking the time to do that. Although I'd still like to see more. So that's your push for this week. Please review the show. It really helps. Josh, anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here today?
last thing I was going to say, Chris, it kind of ties into the various things we've been talking about. I've been thinking, I think I mentioned to you off air, I've been thinking about ways on our next trip that I could reduce my variance a little bit while still maintaining my rating. And okay, what I might try and do is play less on the pass line and understanding pass line and not forgetting everybody, pass line is actually, you know, pass line with odds is the best bet you can make at the craps table, assuming you're at a regular table. But I might try and just do all the numbers across and not play the pass line except when I'm shooting or, you know, some variation of that. I was thinking, Chris, about playing what would be 440 across with no 5 and no 9, but so all the even numbers all the time.
Okay.
For 440 and thinking about that idea or doing the same thing, but playing the 5 and 9 and lowering the 4 and 10, that kind of thing. We'll see. But
yeah, we talked
thinking
about this
some sort of, right, something like that.
I think it's interesting because, yeah, you will get rated better than we do now.
Right.
Which would be, if that's important to you, that's great. And you will have a lot less variance. I mean, mathematically, it's not the smartest play to make.
Not as good, right. It's not as good.
But, I mean, it's not like mathematics have ever driven any of the bets that we make, or we wouldn't play the features or some of the prop action or anything like that. So, no, I don't think it's a bad idea at all. I would be interested to see at the end of the weekend how we varied, you know, in our result with you playing that way and me playing our kind of more traditional way. So I think that will be fun to look into more.
I think if we end up having a really good session or a weekend, I think you would come out, you know, a fair bit ahead. I think if we ended up having a terrible session or a weekend, I think you'd come out further behind.
Yeah.
If I had to guess. Yeah.
That makes 100% 100% sense to me. I don't know why that was so hard to say. Yeah. Well, it's at the end of recording. This is what happens. But
anyway, we'll see if I can, you know, stick with that and find a way. Sometimes when I don't know if this happens with everybody that listens, but sometimes I have my ideas about what, you know, what system I might try or what betting method I might try. And then push comes to shove. And we've mentioned this before, you know, I get behind Chris by a bet on a 5 or 9 and then I'm upset. And so I just go back to the old way or,
yeah, you that's, know, that's so, usually what happens.
Right. So sometimes these ideas about changing betting style last maybe one or two rolls and then I can revert to.
They sound great in theory and then in practice they never happen because Josh looks up and my 6 is at 120 and his is at 60 and he's like, well, how did that happen? Here, just press it and then 7 out.
That's amazing. That's always what happens to me.
If Josh chases a bet, it's almost a guaranteed 7 out.
So anyway, we'll see. I'd like to try and if I can, I'd like based on my last trip, I want to try and lower that variance, but keep my rating. So we'll see. May not be possible, but
makes sense. Well, thank you all for listening.
That's what I got.
We really do appreciate it, and we'll talk to all of you soon.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Vegas, here we come.
Thanks for listening to the Crap Vegas Podcast.
Have you ever been to Vegas?
Check out all our recent news and our Vegas trip calendar by visiting crapvegas.com.
See you in Vegas.